The next case is 07-328, Mark Glassman, Inc. versus Richard Levin, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the court, this case involves a garden variety electronic information service. A plain reading of the definition of electronic information services and this court's controlling law applying that plain meaning require reversal of the Court of Appeals decision and affirmance of the Board of Tax Appeals and the Tax Commissioner. Electronic information services are defined under the statute as the providing of access to computer equipment for the purpose of acquiring or examining data stored in or accessible to that computer equipment. That's precisely what's going on in this case and precisely what was at issue in the MIB and Quotron cases.
Counsel, you say this is a garden variety case. Is this the first time the department has taxed this type of transaction?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. We've been taxing transactions that are pure garden variety electronic information services where there's a database that's being accessed and the information acquired is stored or accessible to that database since the statute was enacted in 1983. Quotron, for example, is a stock quote case that involved just an amount of it, a dollar amount, a stock quote. In this case, we have a copayment amount and insurance coverage information that's being accessed in that database.
If this transaction was handled by a phone call to the same entity versus a computer inquiry, would it be taxed?
Your Honor, if it were, then the telecommunications aspect of the call would be subject to tax because telecommunications services are subject to the tax. The information,
back up here. Okay. You're saying that the fact he used a telephone and pays a tax on the use of the telephone covers that.
And there's a component of that here. There's a dedicated telecommunications line
involved. What's the difference in the price between that entity, the telephone tax, versus the tax imposed here? What's the difference in the price?
Your Honor, the part for the dedicated line is part of the flat rental fee. A significant portion, it wasn't divided up in this case. But that would be part of it. But to answer your question,
you're taxing every transaction.
What we're doing is we're taxing the overall fee, which is divided into two parts. There's a per search charge, and then there's a flat fee each month. And the flat fee includes access to the dedicated telecommunications lines. But to answer your question,
you don't directly tax the telephone call. Those are other entities taxing it, like the federal government and stuff, but you're directly taxing the computer inquiry.
That's right, Your Honor, and if I understand your question, it's if you had a telephone link up and it went directly to what, the insurance company computers, or
to,
where?
To a person that's looking at the data in their computer.
Okay, well that certainly wouldn't be a taxable electronic information service because there wouldn't be the computer equipment involved.
So if all these companies, as a result of your tax decision, go back to phone calling, you don't tax those entities?
That would be true, Your Honor, if it were done that way by, you know, voice or by persons, but, you know, the statute was enacted in 1983 to encompass the, and actually anticipated the internet and all that.
Counsel,
so the idea is that's a very valuable service to get it in real time, very quickly, as opposed to the old style where you just call up and talk to people. I love talking to people, but that's not the way of the world these days.
You love talking to us, too, and we can tell that.
Most of the time.
Counsel, easy for you to say that this is an easy statute to read. We're not exposed to it on quite the regular basis that you are. So I found it a little difficult to read. And let me take you through the practical question or the practical issue of what happens here. It seems under this fact pattern, pharmacist or pharmacist assistant asks a question, and they ask that through a service provider, who then in return asks the question, their specific question, to an insurance company who answers the question. So it's question ask, answer imparted back to the pharmacist 4 seconds time. I don't see any indication that there's any data stored or retained by the person in the middle. And I don't know whether that's important.
It isn't, Your Honor, and certainly it is important under the view of the Court of Appeals and the taxpayer, but it's not important under the plain meaning of the statute.
All right. Now let me ask you then, other practical...
And the court's controlling precedent.
Practical examples. Does that then mean that every time one uses a credit card at any location, that the same tax applies, that any time one pays with a check and they run it through one of those little machines that determines whether or not you have funds in your account, the tax applies? Because that would seem to be the same process. Question asked, question answered, almost instantaneously.
I think what you have to do, Your Honor, is recognize that we have a pure service here. The only thing that's being provided is that. And with the credit card, when a consumer submits a credit, I guess when are you referring to a retail merchant, or as opposed to you or me? Because
yeah.
If you or I do it, it's only for business purposes that the tax applies. And we also have a situation under the statute where only those transactions where the true object of the transaction is the receipt of the electronic information service, and it's that receipt of the service is not incidental to some other service.
So,
personal professional
service. Let me parse your answer now. You said it only applies where there's a business transaction.
For business purposes.
So, yes. If you use a credit card for business purposes, does it apply?
Well, there, you're not being charged for access. What you're being charged for is the use of the card. And actually, the retail merchant is being charged for having that card available. That would not. Any provision of electronic information services would be purely incidental to the primary purpose of that transaction, which is simply to use the card and make it available.
So is the merchant taxed then by using that check clearing device?
That very well could be the case, Your Honor. You certainly would have that situation if there were no other exception or exemption that applies. And again, we'd have to look at the contracts in those cases to see what the facts were. But it very well could be that the merchant's acquiring of access to a database would be subject to a charge. And of course, it may be a quite nominal charge.
The reason,
nonetheless, it would be a taxable transaction.
It seems like this is extremely important from this standpoint. The General Assembly, I think, has been careful not to tax a lot of what's going on in this electronic world. And they've done so, I believe, because the argument is if you tax it, it'll go elsewhere. You know? But apparently with this statute, they do want to tax certain things that can't go elsewhere. In other words, your argument is the pharmacist who asks the question and gets the answer has to do that in Ohio. Can't do that in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So the arguments that if you tax this, it'll move elsewhere wouldn't apply. I still think it's difficult to parse this language or understand this language and understand what's in and what's out.
Honor, I certainly in the MIB case, which you joined the majority on, as to Justice Moyer, who run the court, and Justice Stratton authored a dissenting opinion, not on this point. It was also raised in MIB that there was one of the exceptions applied, that it was a personal professional service. But apparently you joined the majority that there was a tax, that the services provided fit the statutory definition of electronic information services.
But Mr. Hubbard, in MIB and Quotron, those were two-party transactions. There was a request from one party for information coming back. A fair reading of your opponent's position would be this is a three-party transaction, which is more akin to the subject that Justice Pfeiffer was talking about and is the subject of the PNC Bank. And there we have a third party, and the argument is at least made, we're really buying access to a high-speed pipeline, not information. What is your strongest response to that?
Your Honor, thank you for asking that question, because...
Well, you're welcome.
I was waiting for that. I was hoping for that. Because actually, the Quotron case was a third-party case. The Quotron computers were the financial exchange computers, and that was just as in this case, it was in real time. So what you had is Quotron Systems was the provider of the electronic information service. It provided an intermediary computer link between the stock brokerage firms who purchased the service and the major stock exchanges. That's identical to the situation here. And the stock quote information is identical as highly akin to the co-payment amounts that are provided from by accessing the various insurance companies' databases. So it's interesting that in this case, the appellants assert they embrace Quotron, and they attempt to distinguish it factually on a basis that just doesn't stand up. Now, it's true. In MIB, there were only the service provider and the customer. The Medical Information Bureau was the provider of the service. The Medical Information Bureau members were the purchasers of that service. And there were two computers maintained by MIB, the computer that stored the information and an intermediary computer which linked with the terminals maintained by the Medical Insurance Bureau insurance members.
I mean, that's interesting, but what I'm trying to get to is, I think the holding in PNC was, and you clarify my understanding of it, there was no direct access to the information that the bank had because there was a third-party intermediary. And I think the best position advanced by your opponent would be that's the same situation we have. We're not accessing a third party. We're accessing a middleman. Mm-hmm. And so we're more akin to the PNC case than we are to any of the others.
Well, that's right, Your Honor.
To have you get to.
I think you're right. I mean, they're certainly right that there were only two. The computers involved in the MIB case were owned and maintained by the provider of the service. But again, I would note in Quotron that's not true. And also I would note that even in the MIB case, there were two computers, so there was an intermediary link. The only question was, in that case, the intermediary link was owned by the same company that owned the computers that stored the data.
So how do we ferret out the difference between the Quotron, if that's a three-party transaction, the PNC, if that's a three-party with different results, in this case?
Well, I think it's very easy because
it's easy, tell us.
Well, yeah, you do it by recognizing that PNC was wrong. I mean, PNC was a Board of Tax Appeals to case, and it didn't have the benefit of MIB, and frankly, they misanalyzed Quotron because they didn't recognize the basic facts of Quotron, just as the taxpayer here is trying to get the court to do. And I think, but probably the most fundamental thing, I'd refer you to the definition of access. The whole discussion this court had in MIB as to what access means. And it couldn't be clearer that access includes situations where there are intermediary computer links. And I might also add that subsequent to MIB, applicable here, the commissioner promulgated an administrative rule that expressly defined electronic information services as including internet access services. And internet access services include a whole bunch of intermediary computer links. In most instances, the internet access provider we know doesn't control the computer equipment in which all the data is stored in the various databases. So what we're really talking about here, if you go with the idea that you can't have any intermediate computer link, a third party, then basically you're going to have to scratch out the internet access from the tax. And that's a major revenue blow to this state. We're talking significant dollars. So I think more fundamentally, it would the statute's extremely broad. Look at that definition. It's providing access to computer equipment for the purpose of acquiring or storing data stored in or accessible to. It doesn't have to be, it just has to be accessible to it.
PNC was not appealed by your department, correct?
You're right, Your Honor.
And the counsel argues that this is a very similar to the PNC fact pattern, and to adopt the tax commissioner's, or your position, would be a major expansion that should be done by the legislature. You've just told me that the computer access is the same as the phone access, but it's faster. What would be the public policy reason for the government taxing a more efficient way of doing something?
Well, Your Honor, the public policy reason is that we're trying to tax services and broaden the base. I mean, we have a mandatory duty, the tax commissioner does, to apply the statutes. In Quotron, this court expressed its opinion, affirming the Board of Tax Appeals and the tax commissioner on a service that's virtually identical here. In fact, if anything, the information, the quantum of information provided here is far greater than in Quotron, because there it was just a stock quote, which is akin to the copayment amounts. Here we also have insurance coverage information. And this court affirmed very strongly Quotron and MIB, and that comes after PNC. And I might also add that we then have the administrative code rule that should be given the force and effect in the law if reasonable, and it certainly is reasonable. The commissioner has applied this. The public policy reason would be we'd be raiding the public fisc. If we come up with a decision here that just follows what the Court of Appeals does, it says it's not data, or there's not a sufficient quantity of data, or that there's not direct access because they're intermediary computer links, we might as well just scrap the whole darn statute.
You've used your time, Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Domingo.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm representing Appley Mark Glassman, Marks. And I'm dividing my time equally with Mr. Bernert, who is representing the amici organizations. I ask this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision, and here's why. The essence of a taxable electronic information service is, when you peel everything back, is the ability to access the data files of the provider. And we do have discussions in our briefs concerning intermediaries, and that's important when you have an intermediary in conjunction with a mere conclusion being conveyed. Then it further solidifies that you don't have access to the computer data files of the provider. And that's what this case boils down to. And that's why this case is distinguishable from Quotron and MIB. Those are correctly decided decisions. But in those cases, the subscriber had access to the data files themselves that MIB and Quotron were maintaining.
So, Mr. Domingo, if the pharmacist, instead of getting the information through the third party, were to use the computer and do a search himself and be able to get online, put the individual's name in, and have the information pop up, that would be different than what we had here?
Yes, it would, Your Honor. If by going through that process, the pharmacist's pharmacy computer was communicating with an insurer's computer, and they allowed you to enter inside of the computer to receive, review, examine, consistent with the language in the statute, access, examine, those mean that you have to have the ability to receive, review that data within the computer, not just a mere conclusion that's formed from the data. And that's all we're receiving in Mark's case. Pharmacy sends a question. It just gets a response back. And there's a reason that when that question is sent, that it meets the computer, the insurer's computer, at its gate. The computer won't allow it in there. There's a big barrier there, and there's a reason for that, because of the privacy reasons. That insurer is not going to allow a pharmacy access to that data file because it's confidential information. Federal law won't allow it. The HIPAA regulations. Also, even if federal law allowed it, they don't want anybody fishing around inside their data files to see perhaps maybe we could determine whether this prescription has a higher level of reimbursement and in turn a higher profit margin, whatever it might be. So there's a reason this barrier exists. And these cases are all distinguishable based upon that fact.
Counsel, could you use, I was going to ask if you could use this to something we may be familiar with, say the legal research LexisNexis, for example. You would consider that to be an EIS of the
absolutely.
System? Because you can get in there and do a variety of searches and so and forth.
Absolutely. And if there are 10 intermediary computers between the requesting computer, the computer in my office, and it had to go through 10 different computers to get to Westlaw, it's still taxable. Because at the end of the day, we get access to the data that's within the Westlaw computer. That's what happened in Quotron. There were libraries of information. The record reflects that the subscriber, those stockbrokers in Quotron, had access to that data within those files. There's Dow Jones News Service, Wall Street Journal, stock prices, commodity prices. Whatever was in those files of Quotron was conveyed. You could go in there and receive it, directly or indirectly, and that's the key.
The counsel, the statute doesn't say access to all the data, it says access to data. And I understand the argument that if you're asking whether or not a person has insurance, you get back a yes or no, which would be a conclusion. But as I understand what's accessed is also, is there a copay and how much is the copay? And that would be information that resides on the end computer that's at the provider's computer that's accessed. And that seems to me to be real data because it would vary depending on, you know, what plan and all that sort of thing. And so is your argument that it's the quantum of data that's determinative here? So if you can access everything or a good portion of it, then that perhaps is taxable, but if you just get a little answer, that is not taxable or should not be taxable?
Well, the quantum is certainly relevant, but I would say, Your Honor, that in that circumstance, that it still is a conclusion being formed from the actual data itself, because I'm sure there's a lot of baseline information that supports what the copay is, and there may be different copays or different totals that are being accumulated, and so our position is that you have to clearly be able to directly or indirectly receive the data files from within that computer.
Well, counsel, it would seem to me in the context of what your client does that an additional question or series of questions are considered. That is, when the pharmacist plugs it in, I assume they're saying we have a prescription here for this drug specific. And the answer may also come back that this person is covered, but you're going to have to use a substitute drug. Mm-hmm. Or the copay is this if you use generic, and it's this if you use the prescribed drug. So there's a, I guess you could look at it as a series of questions, but there's an analysis, instantaneous analysis performed at the computer of the insurer.
But Mark doesn't have the ability to make an independent determination itself as to those conclusions. We can't go into the insurer's files and say, all right, it looks like there's coverage for this drug, but there's also a generic drug and so forth. Those conclusions are being...
Well, they're determined by the insurer rather than
right.
by your client.
Right. And that's not the case in the Quotron situation in the MIB. They just convey to us or the subscriber that actual information or data files that are there. There's no barriers that
but even
there.
In that, one, if you're thinking of stock quotes, one doesn't say, you know, we want to see everything you've got. You ask, again, specific questions for which there are specific answers. Stock X is trading at a certain price at this point in time.
Well, that was just one of the files, though, that they could access. There's also other news services, the Wall Street Journal, consistent with a Lexis and a Westlaw. And so, in conclusion, we're, again, asking this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision that this service is not taxable. And I'm going to reserve the rest of the time for...
Thank you, Mr. Domingo. Mr. Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Edward Bernard. I'm here on behalf of the Ohio Pharmacists Association, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, and the Ohio Council of Retail Merchants. I'd like to address some of the specific questions that have come up. With respect to the phone call and the taxation of that, there is a telecommunication charge. There is also a charge on internet service access. So these pharmacists are paying to access the internet, and we're talking about a second tax on top of that. With respect to whether there's a third party involved, we are not focusing on whether there is a party in between the source of the data and the pharmacist. We're focused on whether there is the access to the data. So in the case of the pharmacist doesn't want to know what the plan says, the whole plan and all the exceptions. It wants an answer to specific questions. So is there coverage and what is the deductible? So it's the result of it. It's analysis as opposed to just simply the answer.
Mr. Bernard, when you said that there's already tax for the electronic access, does that tax specifically talk about the electronic information services under the statute?
No, it is possible that there would be two. So if you are accessing LexisNexis, you would pay two. You would pay for the access to the internet, and then you would pay for LexisNexis.
Well, when we look at the definition under the statute, it seems to, I understand the position co-counsel is taking here, but it says providing access for the purpose of examining or acquiring data.
Yes.
And that's, it doesn't say all data, as Justice Cupp points out. Examining or acquiring data stored in or accessible to the computer. That seems to cut against your argument that the EIS is not within the definition of what we're talking about here.
Well, EIS gives you access to all those computers and all the information inside those computers, and it has been subject to tax. This does not give you the same access that either internet generally does or definitely LexisNexis or Westlaw, because there you control the search. This was built on the old time-sharing concept where you had access to a computer and you could control everything that was in there. The Babcock & Wilcox Company case where they controlled what was in the files in there and they were able to work with them. Then we have the statute. You came back with Quotron and said it's the same thing if you have access to the data files that are inside the computer, and that's fine. And that's the way it's been applied for 15 years. And now we have
Counsel,
something, I'm sorry.
The distinction that I'm having difficulty with is what exactly is the definition of data? And in your scenario, when the insurance company, or excuse me, the pharmacist is asking for information, they're asking for maybe three pieces of data. And you're saying because they don't get in there and mine that themselves and then extricate that information, and the intermediary does that, compiles the answer, and then gives it to them, there's the distinction.
That is the aspect of the distinction. But we're talking about a computer-oriented service, automatic data processing. That is a discrete service.
Mm-hmm.
And it has always been when you're using the computer as the focal point of the transaction. The computer is not the focal point. You can do this by telephone. And what they want is not the data that's in there and the entire plan. They want the result so they can go ahead and approve it. And then the credit authorization. You don't get access to the whole file for the person who's standing in front of you swiping the card. You just get a yes or no. And it's the same thing. And even though there's two pieces involved, the approval and the amount, it's being analyzed and presented to you, and it's not you analyzing it yourself. And that distinction has been recognized for the last 15 years, and it's a very important distinction.
Is this a case of a change in interpretation by the tax commissioner of what is covered under this statute? Because as you say, the statute's been in existence in this form for quite some time. And why is this case just coming here now? Is there something else going on?
There was a sense in the record, Your Honor, that, and it was expressed in the brief, that they thought this was another kind of service, and then it just kind of grew out from there. In any case, it has not been applied this way. I think it's very significant that there's an opinion of the tax commissioner in 2 months after Quotron that is a situation where you just get back information from the computer, and that's 92.007 that's cited and included with the materials. And the tax commissioner himself recognized that Quotron was not the extension that the tax commissioner is asking today. So I believe it has been applied consistently. I believe this case is an outlier. The board's decision was 2-1. The Court of Appeals was unanimously opposed to it. And we're asking you to keep the status quo. If this needs to be imposed, and I don't believe it does, but if it does, the General Assembly should have a role in this and looking at this, because this will be a very big change, and it will be a very expensive proposition.
Mr. Bernard, you indicated that this distinction that you're drawing for us has been recognized, did you say, for 15 years?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which is the distinguishing case that points that out, that distinction?
Well, Your Honor, after the Quotron case, we have the opinion of the tax commissioner in 1992.
That's 92.007?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And then the second one is the PNC case,
okay,
which was not appealed.
Yes.
And if we were giving opinions to taxpayers, we certainly would have relied on all three, Quotron, PNC, and the opinion. And MIB is a different situation. It's an easier case when all that data is just in a file and it's provided to the consumer in that case. So that's an easy one. But putting the three together, you never would have advised your client that this was taxable, because it that's the consistent position that's been applied.
Counsel, I think probably more than normally, we're a little bit concerned about what the revenue implications are. And I think this court would generally be of the view that decisions on this, because the amount of electronic activity has exploded exponentially. It's a big part of our commerce. Much of it goes untaxed, and that appears to be intentional on the part of the General Assembly, but some is taxed, and this statute is in play. So whichever way we go, I would think we would want to write this case narrowly so that it is, your concern is if we decide it for the tax commissioner, that this is a green light to tax a whole bunch of things that aren't now being taxed. Their argument is if we decide it your way, it will take significant revenue off the table that's being achieved now. Now, how do we answer the question either way without disturbing the status quo?
Your Honor, we're not talking about revenue they're collecting right now. They are not collecting this revenue now.
For this taxpayer.
Right, Your Honor. What I'm saying for these kinds of charges and for the credit, they're not collecting this tax. We're talking about an additional tax levy, additional tax assessment on taxpayers in the state that the General Assembly hasn't voted on. So we're not taking any revenue away from them. The suggestion that the internet tax would be...
Well, Mr. Hubbard suggested if we came out the way you would have us write this case, it would undermine a substantial stream of existing revenue.
Your Honor, I do not believe that to be true. I believe that this has not been collected. I do not expect refund claims based on my experience. I just don't think that's been happening. And I think that we're talking about additional revenue, not loss of revenue. And it's been applied consistently for 25 years. And we're talking about making a quantum leap in this case. And Ohio does tax many more internet services than other states do. There's a federal statute that Ohio is immune from because they're grandfathered, But those taxes are all preserved. And that letter that was attached to the reply brief, that was addressed by Congress. They've got that revenue. That won't be affected. If you affirm the Court of Appeals, they won't lose any of that revenue.
But for at least one of us, that's not the issue here. And the General Assembly, no matter what we do, the General Assembly can respond if it wants to change the public policy, can it not?
No. Yes, Your Honor, if you decide to affirm, then it can make the change. But if you were to reverse, there would be 4 years of assessments against people, unanticipated. And the General Assembly can't fix that. And that's why if there's any question about it, you should affirm.
Well, let's explore one more thing that you just articulated. Congress has legislated in this area. And you said Ohio is collecting some revenue that other states aren't because is it this act was on, or is it others that were on the books before Congress?
That's correct. And Congress specifically grandfathered Ohio in on these services.
On this particular statute?
Yes, Your Honor, on this particular statute.
So if we give a more narrow interpretation to the taxability under this statute than the General Assembly thought they had, they can't come back and fix that because they wouldn't be grandfathered in at that point. That would be a new statute.
No, I don't believe that's true because they just did change and added another one that was, and they're arguing that it's part of the statute and they can do it. So I don't think that's the issue. But another question would be, why should we be different
than
other
states? We need to sum up, really. This, you've gone way over time. Thank you, Mr. Bernard.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hubbard, you've gone over your time, but not very much. Take 30 seconds, see what you can do with
that. Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Kupp, I wanted to address your comment about you don't have to search the entire you don't have to be provided with the ability to search the entire database in order for you to be receiving a taxable
electronic information. I only asked a question. I did not make a comment.
Okay. With respect to that, actually, if Mark Glassman Pharmacist had all the customers that were in a particular insurance company's database, that they would be searching the entire database. They'd have that opportunity. And so, I mean, that's one way to think about this. And I wanted to address your last comment, Justice Pfeiffer. That's absolutely the case. I mean, if this court were to narrow what it articulated in Quotron and MIB and what I believe the plain meaning of the statute is, that would preclude the General Assembly from fixing it because of the federal preemption. That's absolutely right.
And Mr. Hubbard, is this double taxation on the internet access? Because I thought I understood opposing counsel to say, yes, this would be a second tax.
Your Honor, actually, with respect to that, they're talking about, let's suppose you get Time Warner or Roadrunner, whatever it is, but then you subscribe to a specialized service that you pay for, like Lexis. You would be paying for the internet access service, but that's a different service than for the Lexis service. In this case, it's not in the record, but I would believe that they probably do have an internet access service too. I'm just saying, my point was that internet access entails a lot of different computers. And I would agree with the characterization. What they're saying is you got to reach into the database and there can't be any intervening computers. That would be the only way that any transaction would be subject to the tax. And that's just, that would limit the tax to almost nothing, almost no transactions just involve one computer. There's almost always a computer link. Even in MIB, there were two computers on the premises of MIB.
And do those internet access taxes come from the same definition that we're talking about here under EIS?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
They do.
In fact, if you look at our rule on it, it expressly defines electronic information services as including internet access service.
And Mr. Hubbard, this is a sales tax that's being applied?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's 6%, the general state rate?
That's right, Your Honor, and then there can be a permissive county.
So, counsel, are you collecting this tax now or not?
We are collecting the tax on all the transactions we've identified. Contrary to what Mr. Bernard has asserted without anything in the record, there absolutely isn't a massive amount of assessments that are, issued that we're going to slam on the Board of Tax Appeals. I'm not aware of a single one. So what it would do is it would just throw in disarray the entire definition, and this court has been very strong in applying the plain meaning of the statute. I think the decisions were exceptionally well written, and they were joined by everybody.
You want to respond to counsel's assertion, I think, that sort of a reliance argument that, that the tax commissioner for 15 years has relied upon 9207, an opinion that, that...
That's an informal opinion of the commissioner that is XXXed out, and all the informal opinions of the commissioner are dependent upon changes in the law and the rules. And that had to do with Bureau of Motor Vehicle Reports, which is a public document, like 15 cents. I mean, we're not talking, you know, a major issue. And those opinions are limited solely to that particular transaction for that taxpayer, and that's it. And that's their sole reliance. If you look at their briefs and their authority, they don't even list that. They attach it, but they don't list it as authority.
Mr. Hubbard, I assume that most pharmacists or pharmacies, and there sure are a lot of them in the state, have the same or similar type of system or setup. And you're representing to the court that the tax commissioner is taxing all of those currently?
Your Honor, what I could represent to the court is there are tremendous amounts of assessment claims, as Mr. Burnett has apparently suggested, you know, pending the the commissioner's not holding any final determinations on this issue. Okay, and the Board of Tax Appeals doesn't have any cases on it. So I don't know what he's referring to. You know, either the pharmacies are paying the tax or they haven't been audited.
Wait a minute, either they're paying the tax or they haven't been required to pay the tax?
No, they haven't been audited. I mean, the commissioner doesn't assess every taxpayer in the state every year. I mean, I can't represent to the court that I know that everybody's paying the tax. But what I can say is there aren't any pending cases on this that the commissioner's holding back.
I think you're saying that Mr. Bernard's client is not unique.
Yeah.
Be fair to say?
That's fair. That's certainly fair to say.
Well, follow up on all of this. One usually pays a sales tax as part of the bill, whether it's a restaurant check or in the grocery store or wherever. Here, I think it would be reasonable to assume that unless you're Walgreens or one of the big ones, the normal retail pharmacist that has something like this, if the tax isn't billed, wouldn't have any idea that he's supposed to fill out
fair,
a form and send in a sales tax.
You're right, and the vendor normally collects the tax unless there's a direct pay permit or something. That's the normal course. You're right.
And so if...
But that's who we assessed here is Mark Glassman, the purchaser, not the consumer, not the vendor. So we do, you know, tax businesses directly rather than tax the vendor of the service.
Okay. So it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume that most of the independent drugstores up and down Main Street all over this state aren't paying the tax at this point because they don't know about it.
That very well could be the case, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.